how does an entire town reinvent itself in the 21st century? Let's look at Kannapolis, North Carolina. A decade ago, Kannapolis suffered the largest single layoff in North Carolina history. More than 4,000 people, a tenth of the city's population, lost their jobs when a textile mill, which had been the heart of the town's economy, shut down. Residents compared it to a natural disaster. Not long after, Los Angeles billionaire David H. Murdoch, the chairman of the Dole Food Company, bought the former mill, invested millions, and created a life science complex dedicated to biomedical research. That was in 2004, and that's also where things get interesting. Because the research complex brought some jobs for the people of Kannapolis, but some residents in turn gave scientists something even more valuable than their labor. They gave researchers their genetic information through blood and urine samples, medical records, and family histories. Amanda Wilson wrote about it in the magazine Pacific Standard. And Amanda, let's start with one of the largest studies taking place in Kannapolis, the Murdoch study. Tell us about that and why some Kannapolis residents wanted to take part.
The Murdoch study aims to collect blood and urine and medical histories and bank it for future research. But it's one of the biggest, and it's drawing a lot of support. Yeah. Over 10,000 people so far.
So just to be clear, as you just said, 10,000 people so far from Kannapolis have agreed to give blood and urine samples and family medical histories, even access to their electronic health records for this genetic data bank, essentially?
That's exactly right.
And what are researchers hoping to get out of having collected all of this data?
Well, I think the hope is that these samples might one day lead to insights or discoveries about the nature of disease or afflictions of the community or other diseases that are very common, some of the biggest chronic illnesses of our time, like heart disease or cancer.
And Amanda, I note from your article that the Kannapolis residents who are taking part in this study are getting paid with a $10 gift card to Walmart. Is that right? That's the reimbursement they're getting, essentially?
Correct.
Yeah. It seems like a small amount. I mean, did anyone have any concerns about that, or did the amount not even really matter to them?
Well, I think that lots of people who are participating, they're participating for very different reasons. But I think by and large, most people are giving out of altruism. In fact, I visited a church where people gave very willingly, and they said that they're giving to help generations down the road, and they hope that it will benefit their town's economy, and they want their contributions to have a broad public benefit.
But at the same time, there have to be some ethical concerns about this. I mean, they're giving over essentially the most intimate information about their lives, their families, their health histories.
The concerns, I think, come from the bioethical community around the question of consent. And this type of research is very new, and it departs from research in the past because it asks participants to give consent for an indefinite future, which is very common in the industry of biobanking. So the ethical concern comes from the idea that you might not be able to give informed consent for an open-ended future. These samples are very valuable. And there's a strong commercial interest in them, and there's profit to be made. So just as we've seen Facebook and Twitter have created huge corporate wealth using data from individuals, genetic data and information has the same value, if not more.
Amanda, actually, I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because that does raise an important question, that if the biological information is so valuable, shouldn't the residents of Kannapolis, shouldn't the town, since it's such a key participant here, somehow be compensated in a way that's equal to the value of the information they're giving to the researchers?
Well, there are lots of ideas about what they should receive, and some people say that they should maybe be given access to tests, or they should have knowledge from their own genetic sequences that might be taken out of their blood or urine, you know. But that's largely handled by the institution carrying out the research. And in this case, they've checked all the boxes and they're doing everything according to the rules. But we don't know exactly how profitable this will be, and we don't know exactly how much benefit stands to be gained by all the different parties involved. But there are so many different interests. And I think that communities across the country, and actually a survey found over 800 biobanks across the country and of all different sizes and all different structures. But I think that one example might come from the Navajo Nation, and they actually instituted a moratorium on genetic research. And they are very interested in the question of knowledge and what knowledge they are giving away and what knowledge they're getting back. Mm-hmm. And so they ask that question with every research study that goes on there. So maybe a moratorium is not the answer, but there are serious questions that need to be answered about what consent means and whether it's possible to give informed consent for an indefinite future. Quite frankly, the regulatory frameworks that were put in place assume that you can de-identify samples, but we know that you can take the sample out of the person, but you can't take the person out of the sample.
I'd love to talk a little bit about someone that you met with in particular, Norris Dearman.
Yes.
Yeah, 91 years old. Tell us a little bit about Norris.
Well, he was very sage, and he remembers the town's history. He began working there as a young man, and he said that he contributed to the biomedical research because he really wants to help others, and he also was kind of curious, so I think he has this the same curiosity that drives many of us to wonder about our genes and what they mean and why he's lived so long.
I mean, as we were saying, he's 91. He worked at the textile mill, which shut down, and he started working there in 1938. And now, as you mentioned, here he is taking part in a 21st century biotech research project. I mean, did he have any thoughts about what other struggling towns could take away from the lessons of Kannapolis?
I think that people in the town really believe that they're doing something unique, but there are many biobanks around the country, and they're becoming more common, especially as our economy turns towards the life sciences and medical research in these communities. I think these issues that kind of come out of the story of the town are, we're going to have to increasingly grapple with these as a society.
Well, Amanda Wilson wrote about the city of Kannapolis, North Carolina, in the magazine Pacific Standard. We'll have a link to her article at hereandnow.org. Amanda, thanks so much for sharing this story with us.
Thank you.